Welcome back to another edition of the Pennsylvania Prisons and Parole Podcast. Alongside executive producer Kurt Bope, I'm your host, Ryan Tarkowski. We received some pretty good feedback last month after our conversation with Miranda Brakebill from SEI Camp Hill about what families can expect when their incarcerated loved one begins serving their sentence in the PADOC system. Today, we're going to tackle another topic we get a lot of questions about: how to visit an incarcerated person at a state correctional institution. And to help us with that, joining us today is Sergeant Lopez, the visiting room sergeant at SEI Camp Hill. Sergeant Lopez, thanks for joining us today.
I appreciate it. Thank you for having me.
We want to get right into it and talk about visitation, in-person visitation at state correctional institutions. So to begin with, when can an inmate receive visitors? Do they have to wait until they get their home facility, or can they get an in-person visitor at the reception and classification facility, SEI Camp Hill?
They can have a video visit after the paperwork is done. So while they're at the diagnostic classification status, is what it's called, they will be able to receive a video visit, which is, it goes in tangent with a physical visit, which is a contact visit. It's called the contact visit. And once they do the list with the inmate and it gets approved through the right channels, it takes about 14 business days for the process. And once that happens, they can have, while they're on a diagnostic classification, they can have a video visit. And then after that, they go into GP, which is the general population, that will be in their home jail or maybe at Camp Hill. Once they're there at GP status, then they can have a personal visit, and that's the same list.
Okay, so in-person or contact visit, depending on how you want to call it, that starts once the incarcerated person has been classified, so whether they're in put into the general population, whether that's at another facility in our system or if they stay at SEI Camp Hill for whatever reason, that's when in-person or contact visits start.
Correct. Yeah.
Okay. And I know years ago, it was kind of a first come, first serve. You show up on a visiting day and you go in and you visit your loved one. But now we sign up for visits and we schedule them ahead of time. Can you talk about how that works?
Okay. They need to schedule at least 3 days ahead of time for a contact visit. And they could schedule all the way out, but not beyond 60 days. And what they have to do is they have to get on the PADOC inmate visitation system, cor.pa.gov. And once they get on that, all they do is put in all their information, the address, the inmate they're visiting, the inmate number that is assigned to the inmate. And they put in all the information exactly the way they gave it to their loved one who's incarcerated, because it has to match. The system knows that if there's a letter off or if the address is incorrect, it will not accept it. And it'll actually delay the process of getting that visitation accepted.
So we're talking people's full government names. We're not going with nicknames or anything like that.
Nothing like that. If they gave the loved one that they're going to use an L for a middle name, and that's all they gave, then it has to match. So it can't be like L for one and then it's Lisa for the other. It has to match, completely match.
Okay, and that's all done. The scheduling visit, scheduling ahead of time, is done through our website, cor.pa.gov, and there's links on how to access the inmate video and visitation system, whether you're scheduling a video visit or an in-person visit. It's all done there at the same time. But I think what we really get a lot of questions about is when folks show up to the facility for the first time. I think it can be intimidating for some folks. It doesn't always feel good to show up to a state correctional institution. People don't really know what to do. So I think that's going to be a big part of our conversation today. As the visiting room sergeant, what is the one thing you want people to know before they show up to your facility?
Well, it's really simple upon arrival. Once they enter, they would need to have with them a valid, unexpired ID card. All right. The officer at the desk will take that. They'll also need to provide the inmate's name and identification number. And once the officer has those two items, which is the inmate's number and their valid ID, the visitor's valid ID, they will go in through the system and verify that they had scheduled a visit for that morning or that afternoon. Once that is all matched up, and then they verify that the ID that they're giving them is actually the same person that is standing in front of them and the person who scheduled the visit, then once that is all done, then they're in the system. They're given a what they call the visitor's pass, and then they will be approaching me to go through the process as far as scanning and going through the metal detector.
So you mentioned a very important thing to bring with you is your ID, government ID, so they can verify that the person on the visiting list is the actual person standing in front of them. What are things that people should not bring to a visit? Maybe let's go two ways. What should be left in the car? Like I'm thinking cell phones are one of the big no-nos.
No communication devices, no phone, no smartwatch, no smart glasses, no headphones. Nothing electronic is allowed inside the institution, not even at what we call the guest houses where I would be greeting them. None of that. All they need is their ID, their car key, and to know the inmate's full name and their inmate number. That's all they need. Other than that, they're gonna have a smooth transition from the entrance all the way down to their loved one who's incarcerated.
What about money? Are there vending machines available? I know every facility might be a little bit different, but in general, should folks bring cash?
Yes, they can bring cash, and they can bring a credit card, but it will not make it past the guest house. What will happen is they'll go to a kiosk, and they'll get a little barcode card, and they'll put the money that they would want onto that card, and that card will be used in the vending machines that is down at the visiting room.
Okay, so bring your ID. You can bring cash if you want to. Probably not an exorbitant amount. You don't want to be, you know, flashing a bunch of money in our visiting room. But now I want to talk about things to completely leave at home. What are some of the things that can't even be brought into our on the property into the parking lot?
No firearm, no drugs. That's basically the two top things. No firearms, no drugs.
And that's why I was leading you there, Sergeant Lopez, because I see the reports and folks, you would think that would be common sense, but it's across the Commonwealth, I would say weekly, we get a report of somebody either having a gun in their glove box, and even if you have a concealed carry permit, not allowed on state grounds.
Not allowed on state grounds whatsoever.
If you have loose bullets rolling around in your back seat, I've seen that come through too, and that's also a no-no.
That's a no-no either. No bow and arrow, no knives, no weapons whatsoever should be on property in a visitor's vehicle whatsoever. And on top of that, we have a canine unit that periodically visits the institution, and they stay in the parking lot. And all vehicles, staff or visitor, all vehicles can be checked for drugs or firearms or whatever is not allowed on institutional ground.
We're chatting with Sergeant Lopez, the visiting room sergeant at SCI Camp Hill, about some do's and don'ts for visiting your incarcerated loved one. We just talked about firearms. Even if you can legally possess the firearms, you cannot bring them to a state correctional institution. You mentioned drugs, Sergeant Lopez. That brings me to the topic of medical marijuana or cannabis and the decriminalization that's happened in Pennsylvania over the past few years. That doesn't mean you can bring your legalized medical cannabis to a state correctional institution.
That is correct. You cannot bring any, even if you have the card, legal marijuana card, you cannot bring that onto institutional grounds. And that's even stated on the website. When they go in to schedule their visit, all those rules are on the website. It tells you leave all that. It actually writes it that way. Leave all that at home. Do not bring it to the institution.
And that's why we're kind of reinforcing that on the podcast today. We do have it on the visiting website. We have it on our public website, cor.pa.gov. You can find the visiting rules there that we're kind of covering today. But it's so important because we don't want to call the Pennsylvania State Police on somebody that's visiting their loved one because they accidentally forgot that they had their cannabis products in their glove box with them, but it's something that we have zero tolerance for. It's written into the law, and it is something we just can't have on our grounds.
Cannot. It's not allowed. We also have scans, so you're also not only going to be scanned through a metal detector, you're going to be scanned through a drug detection machine, so what we call a scan.
So leave all that stuff at home. Don't even bring it in the car with you. Talking about how to dress for a visit, can you go over some of the do's and don'ts of the dress code?
Well, it's real simple. Dress appropriate. Do not put on revealing or provocative clothing. There's ripped jeans are not allowed into the institution. What you would call like tights, spandex, pants are not allowed in the institution. Because not everybody is incarcerated. You're going to be in a big room with a lot of other people who are visiting their loved ones who are incarcerated. Not everybody is incarcerated for drunk driving. We don't want anybody getting offended by someone staring and so on and so forth and creating a disturbance in the visiting room, because we have to consider other people are visiting their loved ones also.
That brings me to a maybe a side question. I don't know if you can answer or not, but when there is a question of dress code and somebody gets denied for whatever reason, whether they have something that they shouldn't have or inappropriate dress or whatever reason that Sergeant Lopez or whoever else is manning the visiting room that day says, nope, we're just not letting you in today. Is there an avenue for appeals?
Let's just say it's clothing. Someone comes in and they're wearing the wrong clothing. I would tell them what's wrong with their clothing, meaning they can't get in because of the rules, and I will allow them to exit the building and go and change. And they could come back with the appropriate wardrobe, and they will be allowed in. Now, if they are scanned and paraphernalia is detected on their hands, shoulders, there's like 11 to 14 different points that the officer could check from the security office. And if they come out that they detected a drug, a paraphernalia, right, then they'll have them wash their hands to make sure. They'll give them another chance to go through the scan again. And if they fail the second time, I call the shift commander. I tell them that there was a double positive on a visitor. That shift commander will allow a one-hour non-contact visit for that loved one to visit the inmate incarcerated. And that's not a sure shot. Sometimes it is denied totally, but most times, 99% of the time, it's a one-hour non-contact visit. Now, if it's through the metal detector, if the person goes through the metal detector, Camp Hill gives three tries through the metal detector to clear it. If they don't clear it on the third try, they are not allowed in the institution. The shift commander is called, that would be 100% no. No one would even approve that, not at any level in management will give that okay for that person to go down, being that they didn't clear the metal detector. Now, if they have, let's say they have a knee reconstruction or hip and they have some metal rods, stuff like that internally, as long as they have medical documentation stating, and also with the letterhead of the medical facility that did the procedure on them, stating that they have a reconstruction knee and they have rods and so on and so forth, as long as they have the location of the procedure, what metal they have in their body, we get them through the metal detector, and then I handheld a metal scan them and make sure that the area that they're stating that has metal is the area that it's indicating on the metal detector.
I was wondering about that. For visitors with medical implants, like artificial knees or artificial hips that would set off a metal detector, just like you see at the airports, we do have alternative means to get them inside. Do they have to bring that documentation every time they visit, or is it a one-time thing and it goes in their file and they're good to go?
Every time they visit, they have to bring in that paperwork or card. Some people have a card from their doctor. but they have to bring it with them all the time. I've had lawyers, I've had politicians, I've had police officers being denied to come in because they didn't have medical documentation. So that is across the board, no matter what, no matter who it is, in order to get down into the visit and have not successfully cleared the metal detector, they need to have medical documentation stating where is that metal located in their body. And I handheld scan them to make sure that that's the area that they're indicating and that area indicates that there is metal in that area.
I want to talk to you in a minute about visiting with children, but before we leave the topic of metal detectors and the drug air scanners, I kind of just assume that people would know this, but it's probably worth reviewing. Why is it so important that every visitor goes through these checks?
Well, we don't want anything coming in and being introduced into the jail. We don't want anyone, we don't want anybody getting hurt with paraphernalia as far as coming into the jail. We don't want anybody high in the jail. That creates a whole chaos. Also, it's a money problem too, because somebody has to pay for that. And that creates a whole havoc and chaos in the jail, because there should not be any uncontrolled substance in the jail. Everything has to be approved. And then with the metal, no weapon could come into the jail at all, not even onto the institutional ground. So therefore, no drugs in the jail and no weapons in the jail. And that is a strict policy all the way around. That's for everyone visiting the jail, and that's even for staff.
I was going to mention that every day when staff members go in, or like when executive producer Kurt and I, we visit a facility, no matter what, we're going through the same screening as a visitor, air scan, metal detector, just to make sure that nothing is entering that facility that shouldn't be there.
Absolutely. In fact, I've had people say that we're much more strict than going into an airport. And that is true. We are very, very meticulous in that area of having people being scanned and also go through the metal detector. And we do not sway in it. We do not go into a gray area in those two areas. Those are strictly done by the book, and they are strictly done by the rules and regulations and policy of the institution. We don't break any of that at all. We don't sway. We don't give anybody any breaks. If you don't clear those two things, most likely you're going to have to heed by the rules and regulations that we abide to.
What is the, in your years of doing this, if you have a story or an example, what's an interesting or something that somebody might not expect that you caught somebody trying to bring into a visiting room?
Most times it's the cell phone. They try to be a little sneaky, like with cell phone or a smartwatch that doesn't look like a smartwatch. Because, see, we have lockers, and if they have something that they need to lock up, like the keys, most times it's the keys. If a person brings in a cell phone and they have it like in a pocketbook and they sneak it in, and they put it in the locker that we assign to them, most times they forget to shut it off. I will find out who's assigned to that locker, the visitor that's assigned to that locker. I go downstairs. I have the inmate go to the front desk where the officer is. I inform the inmate that their visitor has a phone and that it wasn't allowed in the institution and that the visit is now over. So I cancel the visit at that moment, because they need to shut off the phone. And on top of that, they already broke a rule that they're not supposed to bring in any communicational devices into the institution.
Very good. And again, all goes back to keeping the institution free of contraband and safe for the incarcerated population, staff, and visitors alike. Sergeant Lopez, I want to move on to folks that are visiting with children. Are there any special rules, anything special that they should know when they're bringing a small child to your facility?
They give a list of things in the visiting guidelines that they could bring in for an infant or a small child, right? Three unopened commercial prepared, like Ziploc containers of baby food. And we're not talking about, you know, a gallon. We're talking about several ounces of formula, but it has to be sealed. Or they could bring in three plastic bottles, pre-mixed formula for per infant. And that will be checked also, you know, that we will open it. So all these things will be opened and checked that they're sealed. They could bring in three diapers for the infant, for each and every child. They would have to be loose. If it's a toddler and he has pull-ups, they could bring three pull-ups. And they could bring in wipes, but it's not like a whole box of wipes. They have to be taken out of the container. Just a reasonable amount of wipes. And all that they could fit into a Ziploc bag, not a huge Ziploc bag, but a medium-sized Ziploc bag. And we'll allow that for the visitor to bring in all together, because it's hard for them to fumble all that stuff with them.
Anybody that's traveled with a small child will know that. As far as the getting approved to bring the child in, how does that work? You can't just show up with somebody that's not on the list. When does the child have to be on the list? What is it, like an under 2 years old? You're okay, like a baby on a lap in an airplane? How does that work?
Well, after they end up in general population, that's when they could put in the paperwork for the minors. So anybody under the age of 18 would have to get approved. So from 0 to 17, the parent or the guardian has to put in the paperwork, and they could visit the incarcerated loved one.
So no grace period there. Anybody that's showing up has to be on the list. We are running short on time, but I want to get into some of the nuts and bolts of visiting. How long is a typical visit? Is that codified in policy, or is it kind of you can stay until the visiting room is full and you need the room?
It used to be that we didn't have enough room, but being that it's scheduled, there's a limit in the amount of people that could be scheduled. And once that is once that amount is filled, it will show on the visiting schedule website. So when they come, if they come at 8 o'clock in the morning, by 8:35-ish or 8:40, they'll be inside already in the visiting room area. They have a minimal of 1 hour visit, minimal 1 hour, unless there's an emergency in the institution that they're going to lock it down, or there's a disruption and stuff like that. And that will be radioed in by control, and they'll let us know. And then we'll go accordingly, and we'll end the visit. But other than that, it will be 1 hour for a contact visit, minimal. And then the video visit is 45 minutes in its process, just 45 minutes long.
And you mentioned about visits being canceled. Let's say that I've scheduled to visit my loved one maybe in a, you know, tomorrow. I've got the visit on the schedule, but something happens at the jail overnight and it's got to be locked down, or there's a issue in the visiting room, a mechanical issue, the lights won't turn on, or there's some kind of emergency that makes it that my visit has to be canceled. How will I know, or do I have to just show up and then find out?
When that visitor puts in for a scheduled visit, once that person goes to the initial site and puts in all the information, one of the information they're going to put in is an email. So they will be given an email. An email will be sent to them stating that the visit has been canceled. It most likely won't say why, but it'll tell them that it has been canceled. So they'll get it. An email. And because of that, they always suggest, and it's also on the website, that periodically after they make the schedule visit, to check that email in case there was a change on the schedule.
It's very important for folks to know, because back in the old days, before these visits were scheduled and it was just a first come, first serve kind of thing, if there was a reason to cancel visits, we would try to blast it out on social media, put a notice on our website, and let folks know that this, you know, specific visitation at a specific facility was canceled for whatever reason. But folks didn't always see that, because let's be honest, as much as I love them to, not everybody checks the Pennsylvania Department of Corrections Facebook page before doing everything in their day. So this system is so much more user-friendly when it comes to letting folks know of specific incidences that might affect them. So very important to check that email before you get on the road to visit your loved one on that day. As far as conduct in the visiting room, what are the general rules that you want visitors to be aware of?
Well, unacceptable conduct is not tolerated whatsoever. It could affect their privilege in being there. They could be suspended and not be able to come back onto the institution to visit their loved ones. So they need to, you know, act accordingly. There's no profanity. There's also like nothing on a t-shirt that is offensive. There's no stickers with guns or a marijuana plant or anything offensive on the t-shirts and stuff like that. So, you know, we try to keep it as family friendly as we can, because, you know, there are other loved ones. We have to consider that you're not in the room all by yourself. There are other people visiting and there are children there. And we want to keep it as friendly as possible as you can in an institution. I never thought I would say those two words together, but, you know, we just need to have it friendly and family oriented.
The place of business, a place for families, and it's just something to keep in mind. As far as being allowed to hug or kiss or hold hands with your incarcerated loved one, what are the rules about that?
Well, when they first come in and they greet each other, it's a kiss, one kiss and a hug. Then they sit down and they're assigned the placement. The inmate sits in a middle and the visitors sit on the outer of the table, and they could hold hands, but that's about it. There will be no other kissing or hugging until they are being dismissed, or, you know, they want to leave the visiting room, or the visiting has ended, then they will kiss and hug once more, and that's it.
And if you had to give one piece of advice, what's one? I bet I could, after talking to you, I think I know what the advice is, but I'm going to let you give it. One biggest piece of advice for a successful visit with an inmate.
I would say, and I always tell them, less is better. Avoid wearing a jewelry, avoid bringing anything that's not allowed in the institution. And by far, if they would just go to the website, cor.pa.gov, and read the rules and regulations, they will have a smooth transition coming in and going out of the visiting room with no problem.
Thanks again to Visiting Room Sergeant Lopez from SCI Camp Hill. You can find those visiting rules and tips at our website, cor.pa.gov. And you can always follow us on social media for a look inside the facilities and to see what's going on at each of our state correctional institutions. We're at Corrections PA on Facebook, X, and LinkedIn. On behalf of executive producer Kurt Bope, thank you for listening to the Pennsylvania Prisons and Parole Podcast. Until next time.